offering a most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of the Afternoon Satsang. This is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is Arvind, and we have the pleasure of joining you from our studios at the Sri Sathya Sai Media Center. At the very outset, a very happy Navratri to all of you. We hope we all progress on this journey towards Swami and making full use of this opportunity that Navratri presents to each one of us. We are here to resume our satsang on the Sanatan Sarthi. We are going through the early episodes or early years of Swami's avataric life, 1958 to be more precise. And as we spoke last week in the Thursday satsang, where we spoke about the Veda Purusha Saptaha Jnana Yajnam, 1958 is still a time when Swami has not yet instituted the Yajnam. We are going to speak about a time where Swami travelled extensively. I'm not too sure whether this is the first time Swami is visiting that place, but that's a time when Swami went to the East Godavari region, which has got a very fond connection to the Dashara celebrations. If at all you've missed that episode, I think it's still available on YouTube. You can go and look at it, where we spoke about how the Veda Purusha Saptaha Jnana Yajnam itself started in the East Godavari region in Amalapuram, and how pundits and scholars from there were brought, apart from the other places in India, the entire inception of that Veda Purusha Saptaha Jnana Yajna story we shared. Maybe sometime down the line when we go through those chapters in the Sanatan Sarthi, we will come to that portion again too. We'll revisit that. But for now, we are in the September 1958 issue. So we are also going to go through Swami's travels in the months of August and September. But before we go through all of that and the other articles in that issue of Sanatan Sarthi, we most humbly offer our humble pranams at Swami's lotus feet, and let's invite Brother Arvind to join all of us. Sai Ram Arvind.
Sai Ram Prem, and Sai Ram to all our listeners. It is such a beautiful feeling when you go through the text matter and content that you are preparing for the next satsang, and you see so many things that are relevant to what is happening now. It is very amazing because we have not done anything special in terms of efforts to focus on one particular aspect of Sanatana Sarathi or one particular theme. We have not done anything like that. We are just going with the flow. But in the so-called flow, when you see things that are falling so beautifully in place, you realize that even things that are apparently random, things that seem to be happening because of good luck or bad luck, are not so. It's so beautifully being orchestrated by the Divine Master. He's pulling the strings, we are all puppets dancing to those tunes, and he's pulling them in a manner that is best for everybody concerned. At this point of time, it might look like a stroke of extreme good luck or the heavy hand of some terrible misfortune, but it would do us good to remember in our hearts and mind that the Lord is supreme and nothing escapes him. He's doing everything for our good. Why this outburst came about right in the beginning is because as we are going through the September 1958 issue of the Sanatana Sarathi, of course we go through each article except for the first two, which are articles written by Bhagwan, because that is an entire subject in itself, as we have told repeatedly during the Sanatana Sarathi Satsang. The Vahinis we are not covering. But among the other articles, there is one article called He is Karuna by Professor Kasturi. And in that, he narrates about an episode that happened during Dasara. Dasara celebrations, possibly in 1953 or 54, because he writes a few years back. So, a few years back from 1958. So, it might be 53 or 54 or 55. Early Dasara, this is the time when the Veda Purusha Saptaha Jnana Yajna and the Prashanti Vidvan Mahasabha have not yet begun. And again, very, very coincidentally, today we are celebrating the 6th day of Yajna, and yesterday was the 5th day. In many parts of the globe, United States of America, the other half of the globe, it is still the 5th day of the Dasara Yajnam. And the incident mentioned in the Sanatana Sarathi is exactly of the 5th day of the Dasara celebrations. That's why it is so amazing. I think, Prem, we had gone through in the satsang of how the Dasara in those years used to be before the Yagnam started, where Swami would be dressed in a robe color matching each of the Devis. Today is supposed to be for Devi Katyayani. So we have, you know, yesterday it was Skandamata, before that Kushmanda, before that Chandraganta. You know, day one was Shailaputri. So we have all these. So this is an incident episode which Professor Kasturi records to show how Swami's Karuna is. You know, he says that one night of the Dasara celebration, the 10-day celebration, the fifth, before the fifth day of Dasara, the night, that is the night of the fourth day, Swami comes and says, I have got one task, who will help me in this? Please assemble at the mandir. This is a newly constructed mandir in 1950, it had been inaugurated. And all the devotees were excited at the proximity they could get with Swami, especially in the night, because in the night it is usually off limits for everybody. So everybody gathers at 9 p.m. Swami says, these buntings and decorations that have been put up, cloth decorations, on the day one of the Dasara celebrations, they seem to have faded a bit because of the sun and rain. I think we should change them and put fresh looking buntings. So people agree and everyone gets at it. It takes almost 4-5 hours to change all the decorations with fresh ones. And throughout this process, the thought in everybody's mind, definitely Professor Kasturi's, because that's what he documents, is that what is so special about the fifth day of Dasara? Why so much celebration and why all these, you know? Because usually the eighth day, I think, is supposed to be Ayudh Puja, mm-hmm. when you worship all your implements and tools. The tenth day is Vijayadashmi. So there are about 3 or 4 days during the Dasara celebrations which are considered landmark. But the fifth day is nothing. And when they were all wondering why, towards the end, Swami comes and tells, you know why? Why we are doing all this is because your bandhus are coming. Bandhus meaning your friends, your relatives. And the next day, that next day happened to be the day when Swami was conducting a Narayana Seva, feeding thousands and thousands of people who were coming in from all the neighboring villages. This Narayana Seva would be followed by Vastradhanam, where clothes would be given to these poor and needy people. It was a real eye-opener and a beautiful, heart-touching feeling for everyone to realize that Swami was doing all these because they were coming. You know, usually when we have invited a very important guest, we go about decorating our homes and making it ready to receive that guest. And we have our own definitions of who is an important guest, who is just an ordinary guest. So here, Swami was decorating the mandir as if Narayana, Lord Narayana is coming, because that is how Swami considered the Daridra Narayanas. He would never call, in fact, when we say poor feeding, Swami would frown upon that term. That's why we always use the term Narayan Seva. So Swami was doing this and everyone was moved and touched, and at that time, somebody even came and said that Swami, hundreds and hundreds of saris and dhotis are going to be distributed. We shall just put it in the papers, you know, so that it can be a source of inspiration for others. You know, they wanted to basically advertise it. And Swami said, do you publish in papers the news that your friends and relatives had come home? You don't. So this is why when Swami said your bandhus are coming home, he definitely had that feeling that these are my own relatives, my family is coming home. For Swami, the whole world is his family. That is his expansion love. So with that feeling, Swami was preparing, and Professor Kasturi records that this is his compassion, and we have got a lot to learn from those flags. Because, you know, Swami got the entire flags changed, flags meaning those buntings and decorations changed, because the Narayanas were arriving the next day. What a coincidence it is that as we are into the sixth day of Dasara, in the flow of our satsang planning, you know, this is what we had thought so many months before, and we have had many disruptions to the schedule. Despite all of that, we realized that those disruptions were not disruptions. Everything is running as per the master plan. It humbles us, fills our heart with gratitude, and, you know, so much of love for Swami that we are landing up so perfectly with topics and themes that inspire us very aptly.
Absolutely. And what a beautiful story and example of Swami's compassion. And seeing it in the historical context also, 1958 was not a time where I mean, the divide between the rich and the poor was enormous, right? Even in our own times, we've seen the initial years of Gram Seva, how the villages used to look. I mean, we've seen it improve in the decade that we've been part of Gram Seva. And we have some of the videos and old images of Narayan Seva of those days. I mean, the people were really poverty stricken. And in fact, talking of Dashara of those days, Dashara was one of the important festivals in those days. Right? Because it not only was significant as a festival, but it was also an extended festival, right? It would coincide with the winter break during the for the school children. So that was also a time when devotees could come and spend a good amount of time in Prashanthi Nilayam. So that also lended to this becoming a very important festival. And some of the old devotees of those times would say, speaking about this Narayan Seva, you know, it's not merely serving Narayanas during this time. It was also about sitting together and having. So some of Mr. Balapattabhi, whom we have referred to many times in our satsangs, even in Satya to Sai, he says, you know, one of the things that struck him initially, because he was a very rich businessman when he comes to Swami, he said, without any hesitation, we would see royalty, people of, you know, the cadre of zamindars, simple people, village people, all sitting together and having food with Swami. Right, he said for him that was one of the greatest lessons and inspirations when he visited Prashanthi Nilayam, apart from, you know, the personality that Swami himself was. What Swami had achieved through these things was something that stood out to him, and that is in fact a sign of compassion, right? The Navratri is a time when we celebrate the motherliness in divinity, and this showed up. And in that same article where Kasturi writes about Swami's Karuna, he in fact quotes three distinct incidents, one of which is that episode from Dashara celebrations in that year. Not that year, I think a few
years. So 53, 54, that's
53
right.
Or 54. So similarly, he quotes another incident which happens, and this was, I think we had made a mention of the school at Bukkapatnam, which Swami had got renovated, a new block being built.
How, 1951.
Right, how Swami treated the students of that college like Swami treated the students later, right, of his own college and school. A very similar intimacy was accorded to those students of those days. They would become part of celebrations in the ashram. Swami would visit the school quite often for important events. So Professor Kasturi narrates that the birthday festival of Swami used to be celebrated even in that school. And Swami was invited there. So Swami was to go to the school there, probably give a talk and participate in the celebrations and come back to continue the celebrations in the ashram. So Swami went there, Swami gave a discourse, and at the end of it, Swami said, it would be nice if all of you come to Parthi and participate, because again, prasadam was arranged and Swami wanted the children to partake of that prasadam at lunchtime. So Swami told them, and then Swami got into his car and Swami started driving back. And somewhere closer to Karnataka Nagipalli, which means it is closer to Parthi than Bukkapatnam, Swami sees some of these children walking and coming. Right?
On the way from Bukkapatnam to Karnataka Nagipalli.
Right.
So I, reading it, you get an impression that after the talk, Swami might have been whisked away for some snacks or something.
Right.
And because Swami has invited the children set out. And as Swami starts his drive from Bukkapatnam to Karnataka Nagipalli, immediately leaving Bukkapatnam, he sees long rows of children walking towards Puttaparthi, another good 1.5 miles to walk.
Right. So it must have been in the midday and must have been hot.
Just outskirts of Bukkapatnam.
Right. So that is when Swami stops the car and calls a couple of the students, and Swami tells them, why are you walking? And those were the times when students probably would have been even barefoot. So Swami sees that and Swami says, are you going to walk all the way? And this is Swami who is asking, who has done this walk so many times himself.
Mm.
Right? For many, many years, Swami and his friends would walk around that path. So Swami being in that position there, you know, seeing these children, Swami did not want to drive away. So Swami stops there, calls these children, and Swami tells them, you sit here under the tree and I will send a car. So Swami reaches the Karnataka Nagipalli, the other side of Chitravati, and then Swami sends his car And all the other VIPs, the two or three VIPs who had come with Swami.
Must be the royal family right. also.
So Swami sends all those cars to pick up these children. So there might have been 200, 300 children.
More than 300 plus custody right. records.
So these cars were to ferry these children from Bukkapatnam to Karar Nagipalli, and Swami waits there till all these children are brought and are dropped at Prashanthi Nilayam. And people in Parthi are wondering, you know, Swami just went to Bukkapatnam. It's just a few kilometers away. Swami should have come by now. So what would have been Swami is like delayed by 2 to 3 hours. And it is then they realize that Swami is doing this. Swami has transported all these kids to participate in this birthday celebrations. And that's one thing that Kasturi records.
No, I think because it was an article in Sanatan Sarthi, Kasturi has gone a little brief. But he has recorded this even in his autobiographical book, Loving okay. God. So he says that for lack of any other landmark, he says Karnat Nagapalli. But beyond Karnat Nagapalli, till the other bank of Chitravati.
Right.
Because across, all the cars would be parked on the other bank of Chitravati, and they had to cross the Chitravati and come to the Prashanthi Nilayam Mandir. So Swami waited on the other bank. Professor Kasturi writes that there were groundnut fields. Swami sat in the groundnut fields waiting for these children to come mm-hmm. for nearly 3 hours, because there were 4 cars, no doubt, but there were more than 300 children who had to be transported for this 1.5 kilometers. And I don't think in those days we had this tar road that exists today.
Right.
Today it's a 5 to 6 minute journey. It must have been at least a 15-20 minute journey over bumpy roads in those days. So Swami sent, and just unimaginable, a car that is used to ferry the Lord, a car that is used to ferry royalty and the VIPs is now being used for the children, because for Swami that is what is important. And Swami ensured from all the teachers that all the children had come and then only came for the celebration. So 3 hours late, with all devotees waiting there. Amazing. That is the second incident that Professor Kasturi records. Another thing, though not one particular incident, he just records Swami's general characteristic. He says that Swami travels by car whenever he moves about, as everyone knows, but everyone may not know that his expression of prema continues even while traveling. He writes that Swami knows all the places on the roads where there are wayside beggars, and he makes it a point to stop the car and give. In fact, he says along some, commonly traveled routes, Swami knows even the kind of beggars, or there's one blind person here, there's a lame person here. He knows them individually, and on some occasions, Swami waits for them to come if they have not yet come to their spot and goes and helps them. He is ready with his gift, and when the person is spotted, he stops the car, calls him towards in his own sweet voice, and places the aid lovingly in those hands. I think I also remember Dr. Ravi Kumar sir narrating an incident where Swami gives a 100-rupee note to one of the beggars, but since the beggar is blind, he tells that this is 100 rupees, keep it safely, because there's no way for them to tell, you know, Indian currency notes yet are not disabled friendly, they don't have braille. I don't know if the latest notes have got some kind of marking to let the people, those who are blind, to let them know what note denomination it is, but those days it was not there. So Swami himself said, this 100 rupees, keep it safe, and in those days 100 rupees would have been worth a lot. So this is another thing that Professor Kasturi records in that article called He is Karuna. The three instances, one is of the Dasara buntings, one is of the children being called for the birthday celebrations, and the other is how Swami showers his love immensely without any limit on all the, means without being judgmental. I'm saying this with my own personal experience, because many times, you know, we get judgmental. I get judgmental when I see a beggar. If it happens to be a young, hale and hearty person, I just feel like, you can go and work. Why should I help you? And usually, you know, you see an old person, you feel, old person. I get into the thing of judging who is deserving of compassion, who is not. But with Swami, it is not like that. His compassion is for all. If I can deserve Swami's compassion, so can anybody. There is nothing. All of us are, in that sense, beggars at his door, and he showers, and he is the one who enriches us. I think that that important lesson, that you can't be loving if you are judgmental, is what I would take home from this third episode that Sir Kasturi jots.
Right, and the whole idea, you know, whenever Swami speaks of this, in fact, you're talking about Swami giving beggars, many, many similar episodes. This is like Professor Kasturi is writing in 1958. If 1958 itself it has become a practice, then you can imagine in the later years how many more such episodes are there. And as he writes here, designated spots. There are students who narrate about when Swami would drive from Vrindavan to Ooty and Vrindavan to Kodaikanal. You know, in the later years when Swami used to go, that was a time when there were many places like this. And there are times when Swami would stop the car and he would find that the beggar is probably in, you know, the other side of the field. And Swami will wait till, you know, that lady or that man comes crossing the thing, and it'll take about 5-10 minutes. Swami will stop the car and wait for them to come. And Swami will tell that, no, at this point, there is this person who will come and that person has to come. And many, many times, sometimes Swami would stop and call somebody who's working in the field, and they would come and be delighted to see it's actually Swami. You know, they would have thought that it's somebody driving past that way, trying to give away some food, which is excess or something.
Or maybe get directions.
Right, and they would find, they would pleasantly be surprised to see Swami sitting in the car and Swami giving, and Swami would give all kinds of money. In fact, in the other satsang series that we're doing, the one with Dr. Hislop, there he narrates a very similar episode. In fact, we'll do that when we come to that. But he has a couple of experiences related to Swami giving money to the beggars. Because, you know, Swami has the compassion to give, but Swami does not have a pocket to give. Because the way Swami dressed himself all through his avataric life. So this opportunity of giving money went to one of the devotees who travel in the car. So Swami would either give them the money and Swami would take it from them to give when beggars would come, or Swami would give them the opportunity to hand over some money to Swami. So that has a whole set of stories and experiences for the devotees themselves. So in that sense, I think the whole idea behind all of this is, as you rightly said, there is no end to being judgmental, and there is no way you can sometimes ascertain who deserves, who doesn't deserve. So the whole idea Swami conveys is, can you become a little more compassionate than you are? You cannot overnight become as compassionate as the Lord. Swami kind of discourages us from that also. Indiscriminate compassion is also not something that Swami teaches. In fact, any number of times Swami has told, don't give money to beggars, give them food, give them what they need. But become a little more compassionate and a little more loving than you are right now.
I think more than the act of actually giving, it's about knowing. See, the Lord is all knowing. He knows each person's circumstance, how it is. So, I think when you say become a little more compassionate, I feel become a little more caring, get to know what is the background, get to know what will help. You know, 2-3 things come to mind. One is the Chinnakatha that Swami would say, wherein without knowledge, if you go to help, you may actually end up doing more harm. Right. He would tell how a fish gets washed ashore. And it is struggling on the seashore because it needs to get back into the water. A person going there sees that it is flapping about wildly, and he thinks that it is shivering because of the cold. And Swami says he picked up the fish, brought it home, covered it with a blanket and gave little coffee, effectively killing the fish, you know. So indiscriminate compassion can do more harm. That's why get to know. You need to know, have the knowledge that a fish needs water, and however good the coffee, however expensive the coffee, it doesn't help the fish. Though it seems very trivial when we say it like that, a lot is needed in getting to know, you know. Simply going and getting inspired by this and going about on the streets of Puttaparthi, doling out 5,000 rupees. You say, maybe you have that money you can afford. You might actually do more harm. People may not know how to spend that money, how much to give, how to give. So I feel when we say that we need to develop more compassion, it means get more interested, get to know more about it, get to know what is their needs, how ensure that in the process of giving them material prosperity, you are not also unknowingly gifting them the weeds of you know, greed and desire. You know, that is a greater pollution that we are doing. So therefore, help, no doubt. Don't be judgmental while helping, but definitely try to find out what is it that person needs and help him in that manner, because that is another thing that Swami has always done. You know, Swami has gone to determining what is the need and fulfilled that need rather than indiscriminately give whatever a person asks for. I think that's why Swami says, if you need me, you deserve me. You know, you need Swami, he is there for you. So when when we try to become compassionate like Swami, it is a all-round package. We need to be all-knowing like Him. So if we can't be all-knowing like Him, we try to the extent to find out, get to know, be genuinely concerned and interested in wanting to help the other person. It may not always be the requirement of money. It might be a few good words. It might be a few strong words, a few words of conviction and faith that the other person requires. It might be a silent shoulder for the other person to cry on. So many ways we can help when we know what is it that the other person actually needs. So I think it's more about determining what the need is, finding out, and genuinely wanting to help the other person.
And that is the first article in the 1958 September issue. Not the first article in the series, but one of the articles. And because it was about Dashara, we thought it's appropriate to lead with that. So that is one of the main articles written by Kasturi. And we will go back to the journeys which generally Professor Kasturi documents in these series, especially when Swami has come back after a journey. And he has also been fortunate to be part of it. The details are deeper. You get more out of that. So we will go through that. And another very important devotee was drawn to Swami, I think, during one of these trips. We'll speak about that also. But dear listeners, don't go away. We'll take a short break. We're going to play for you a special song recorded during for the Dashara celebrations. This has been recorded by the Telugu team. It's not necessarily a Telugu song. But if you want to see the visual presentation of this song, you can go to the Shri Satya Sai Sandesha Jhari, the Telugu channel. They are releasing one song like this, sung by our own Balvika's children. Every day, this beautifully rendered songs, beautifully presented and beautifully presented in a video form too. We'll play for you the song, but you can find the video of the song in the Telugu channel. Thank you. Welcome back, dear listeners. And that was the song I was mentioning. If you want to see the video of that song and many more beautiful songs, they are still coming till the Navratri gets over. There are special songs every day. You can visit the Telugu channel. We'll go back to our satsang on the 1958 September issue.
So, in an article called Prema Godavari, it is an editor's article, which means Professor Kasturi has penned it. Swami's travel to the East Godavari district, Rajamundry or Rajamahendravaram or Rajamahendrapuram.
I think that's one of the places in Rajamundry, or that's the older name of.
That's the older name, Rajamahendravaram. Okay. I think that's the older name of Rajamundry. Right. Many of these names, the British came and they couldn't pronounce it, so they just cut it into whatever and they just made it, you know. Thiruvananthapuram became Trivandrum.
Right.
Like that Rajamahendravaram became Rajamundry. So, Swami's visit to Rajamundry is documented here. And Swami went to Rajamundry via Hyderabad. So, on the 26th of August 1958, Swami was at Hyderabad. And he inaugurated a Kaushalya Bhavan. You know, tried hard to locate it on Google Maps and other places. Either that building has been demolished or it has been renamed, whatever. But Kaushalya Bhavan was inaugurated, and that was supposed to be the building where Firestone Company, you know, it's a tire company. I think it, even to this day, it manufactures, it's a multinational tire company. Mm-hmm. So the Firestone Company was supposed to be occupying that building. But Swami inaugurated that building and he gave a discourse there very beautifully, playing on the words Firestone. Swami said, every human body is a Firestone. And Swami said that the different blows of life are like the blows you give to the Firestones. And the sparks that get created because of the blows are the sparks of Viveka and Vairagya. Viveka meaning wisdom, Vairagya meaning detachment. So Swami said our body is like a Firestone which is rained by different blows of life. The blows, the adversities, the travails, the difficulties, the troubles that life confers on us are the different blows that we give to a Firestone. I think Firestone is also called a Flintstone.
Right.
I think basically granite in India, because I have seen at night when you throw one piece of granite on another, there's a spark that is created. And Swami says that when the blows of life land on the human body, the sparks of detachment and wisdom arise. Each difficulty, each blow gives rise to the spark. It is now left to us to capture this spark and, you know, grow it into a flame that will burn down all our karmas. Because, you know, even I think early man would have seen that when two stones are being struck to each other, there's a spark that is created. Now, what can I do to ensure that that spark that is created becomes a flame, becomes a roaring fire? In fact, in his transition from a caveman to a modern man, one of the most important discoveries is the discovery of fire. Fire which could be used to cook, fire which could be used as a defense mechanism. And if we look at it, in the entire animal kingdom, in the entire living kingdom, no other creature has control over fire the way man has. Having learned how to foster that spark, man has become the supreme. You know, I don't think it's a coincidence that even in the Dasara Yagnam when we begin, it all begins with the ability to kindle a spark into a flame. A spark anybody, even animals can produce, even by fluke it can be produced. But to be able to nourish it into a flame, and Swami spoke about that. Swami said that, you know, blows, adversity blows, bring out the sparks of wisdom and detachment. In fact, you know, just yesterday, one of my close relatives had a suspected cardiac problem because of which I had to rush him to the hospital, and so many things happened. At the end of the day, it turned out to be all well, nothing, no problem. But in that moment, you get a kind of detachment that comes in, you know, when anybody, that's why we have all these vairagyas. When someone dear passes away, a kind of detachment comes. You realize how everything about the world is so flimsy. It will not last long. What is the point of running behind all these temporary things? And this kind of detachment comes over with any kind of adversity. And to each one of us. So to say that I don't know what is detachment, I don't know what is wisdom is wrong, because we experience it. But it is left to our own sadhana and our own effort to ensure that we capture these sparks and make it grow into a flame that burns steadily day in and day out. And that was the message that Swami gave there. Swami said, you need to cherish and nourish this spark so that it doesn't become, temporary detachment. It is not a vairagya, which is...
Smashan vairagya.
All these different vairagyas, right? They are all considered as temporary detachments. They last for a few hours and they are gone. Swami says, no. Whenever adversity rains these blows on you, when you feel that detachment and wisdom, nourish and cherish. Those are the two words Swami says. Cherish that, which means that way don't complain about adversities, because they bring in an amazing gift which will ensure that no other adversity can ever touch you. Because once you get detachment and wisdom, nothing can ever touch you. And this was the message Swami delivered on the 28th when he inaugurated the Kaushalya Bhavan at Hyderabad. So on the 28th of August 1958, this is what happened. And after that, I think Swami... one more day. The 30th August also Swami was in Hyderabad. And there was another inauguration that Swami did. He laid the foundation stone for Satya Prema Sai Vihar. I don't know what is this also, because if we search Satya Prema Sai Vihar, it throws up the Satya Sai Vihar, which is Swami's school at Hyderabad. But that school, I think, came into existence much later in 1970s. So, don't know exactly what is this. Professor Kasturi also doesn't record, but he says that Swami laid the foundation stone for the Satya Prema Sai Vihar on the 30th of August 1958 in Hyderabad. Then, Swami moved on to Rajahmundry.
The 31st... Swami left for Rajahmundry, which was about 430 kilometers away. I'm not sure whether this is the first trip to Rajahmundry. I was trying to look up that. Because the Sanatan Charti begins with 1958, we don't know whether Swami traveled before. But there are some interviews which we've done, especially the Telugu team. There was one Mr. Suri Babu that they interviewed from Rajahmundry. And he was his father was a very famous Burakatha artist. His name was Nidadavolu Achyutaramaya. So apparently he was one of the very famous artists then, who came for the Vijayadashmi of 1956.
Okay.
And he very hesitantly comes. It's a long story. Maybe for some other day we'll have that. He comes and, you know, Swami calls him and Swami makes him perform. And then when he goes back, he has an experience because of which he realizes who Swami is, and he comes back. And he comes and invites Swami to Rajahmundry. So whether 1957 Swami went, made any trips to Rajahmundry, we're not too sure. If he has not made any trips, then this must be the first trip. And that was a time when that was pretty much an unexplored or unblessed till that point in time. Thereafter, Swami's trips to that region became so extensive and so regular. And that's when so many devotees came. By the time when Swami went to Badri and all these trips in 1960s, a lot of people from that region came. And that's when Gotiti Saraswatamma, whom we spoke about, she was one of those people from that region who was part of Swami's trip to Badri. But this must have been the first or probably the second trip to Rajahmundry.
Prem, this person whom you mentioned, the Purakatha singer,
right, Achyutaramaya.
Achyutaramaya, is he the same person whom you were sharing about as to how he gratefully told Swami that I will go and...
Right, he is the person...
I think you should, yeah, share right. that also.
So maybe we'll, yeah, maybe we'll share the story of how he comes to Swami. As I was saying, he was one of the very famous artists. And Swami had two devotees from that region, Rajahmundry and the places around. One was Mr. Rama Rao, Dandamudi Rama Rao, and there was one Satyanarayana or Suryanarayana, one more person. So Swami would playfully tell that I have put two knots to that region, one more knot is remaining. Right? A reference to the Mangal Sutra tying ceremony during marriages, right? Three knots. Right. So Swami would say, I've put two knots, one more knot is pending. So it appears that the third knot was this Achyutaramaya Garu. So it was during the Dashara time. Again, we're talking about Dashara and this Dashara. So Swami asked Mr. Rama Rao, is there anybody who can come and perform for Vijayadashmi? Some good artist, because that was a time when a lot of these singers who used to come for the Venkatgiri Palace used to be brought here to perform during Dashara. So he said, Swami, I know this one person, Achyutaramaya, but he is very busy. He is a very popular person. And this is the time when they all get booked for concerts.
Performances.
So it's quite unlikely that he'll be free. But the moment this person mentioned his name, Swami said, yes, I want him only.
Just for our listeners who are not aware, a Burakatha is where three people mainly, one is called the Kathakudu or the main narrator, one is a Rajakiyam where he is the kind of person who analyzes whatever the main narrator is saying, and the third person is called the Hasyaka or the comedian who keeps cracking jokes to keep the audience interested. So they take up socio-political, religious, spiritual themes and sing and narrate for an hour. And this was the way entertainment along with information, transformation and, you know, enlightenment was shared with people, especially in the Andhra region. And that's called Burakatha. And Achyutaramaiah Garu was a very popular and famous Burakatha artist.
Right. So Mr. Ramarao goes and invites Achyutaramaiah and he says, who is this Sai Baba and where is this Puttaparthi? I'm not interested in ending. And again, the same thing. He said, Dashara time, you want me to come to some, forlorn place like that and I can't come. And those were the days, 430 kilometers from Hyderabad. Then you can imagine how many days it'll take to reach Parthi from there. So he said no, and Swami had told this devotee that I want him to perform. I don't care how much it costs. Whatever it takes, you have to bring him here. Mm. And so Swami had decided that Vijayadashmi, he is going to perform. And as Swami had willed it, I think there were some cancellations. And suddenly he became free. And then he comes and says, okay, looks like I can come, so I'll come. Mm. And then he says, but I'm very particular. As soon as I finish my performance, you should pay me. And no haggling about the amount and all that. He said, that's not at all a problem. You please come and perform. And that's how he comes to Parthi. The moment he comes, Swami starts talking to him as though, Swami knew him. And for him, he was surprised. Because, those are the days when you don't recognize the people, right? Even if you're famous by name. You're not famous by your appearance. Mm. But the moment Swami saw him, Swami said, hey, Achyutaramaiah, how are you? And he was a little surprised. And then Swami calls him for an interview. And in the interview, Swami asks him, so what will you perform for Vijayadashmi? So he said, Swami, Subhash Chandra Bose and this battle and that war and Pandava's struggle in the kingdom and all that. Swami said, it's such an auspicious occasion. Don't you have any auspicious topic? Some Kalyanam or some event like that. So he said, Swami, many years ago I had done one on Parvati Kalyanam. But after that, nobody is interested in these topics. Everybody wants something which is, more entertaining and, exciting, right? Mm-hmm. So he said, I have not done that for a long time, so I'm not too sure of the script. So he said, okay, you try to recollect. Tomorrow we'll see. Okay, and this person goes and he's given a room in the ashram. He goes and sleeps. In the dream, he has this entire script coming to him page after page. Mm-hmm. In his own handwriting, right? Wow. What he had written when he had done. And he could go through the whole thing. And this is like Swami's Leela to ensure that he's able to do that. And next morning he comes and Swami asks him, so you think you'll be able to do that? And he doesn't want to give away that he had a dream and he had the whole thing coming to him page after page. So he said, yes, Swami, now I've recollected it. I think I can do that. Mm-hmm. Swami says, Manjadi, do it. And Vijayadashmi comes. Of course, it's a phenomenal success. The way he renders it, he's very famous and people are very happy. At the end of it, he comes. Swami gives him the dakshina that is supposed to be given to him and the artist who performed along with him. And then Swami tells him, don't go away, I'll give you prasadam. And then Swami gets busy with the other festivities and he says, what more prasadam? I've got my money and I don't need anything more than this. And he takes the next commute out of Puttaparthi and comes away. Apparently, a few days later, he is sitting in one of his neighbor's houses in the porch where he used to sit and read his newspaper or something. And he gets a very severe attack of asthma. He was apparently a patient who already had that problem. And he looked around. There was nobody around and he's not able to call out. He is gasping for breath. He thought that that's going to be the last few moments of his life. And suddenly he hears Swami's voice. And Swami tells him, Achyutaramaiah, I told you I'll give you prasadam. Why did you come away like this? And he's looking around, nobody around, but he's able to hear Swami's voice. And then very gently Swami tells him, don't worry, nothing will happen to you. Go to your house, go to your room. I have kept the prasadam under your pillow. Mm. Right? So after hearing this voice, he's able to breathe a little better and somehow he manages to reach his house. His room is in the first floor. He climbs the first floor. He removes his pillow and neatly stacked are Vibhuti packets which Swami would have given him in Parthi if he had stayed the next day.
Right? Wow.
So he takes it, he puts it in water and he drinks that and immediately he feels much better. And as soon as he could, the same day or the next day, he catches some bus or train and comes to Parthi. And then he comes to Parthi and he says, Swami, please come to Rajahmundry. You have never come there. And then Swami says, but who knows me there? There's nobody there. Who knows me there? And then Mr. Achyutaramaya says, he says, Swami, people may not know you, but people know me. I will tell them who you are. I will tell them what a great opportunity it is to have you visit them. And that is how it happens in the first few visits. He goes village to village doing Burakathas on Swami.
Hmm.
Right? And thereafter, the person whom we spoke to, his son, Mr. Suri Babu, he was also trained in Burakatha and he said that we have done so many Burakathas on Swami's life. We have written so many songs on Swami and Swami has allowed us to perform. And many, many years later, one of the Vijayadashmi Swami allowed his children to perform the Burakatha, where his son and his daughter and others were playing this role. Suri Babu and others. Right? So that is how, and in fact, he becomes one of the very, very staunch devotees of Swami. He names his daughter Satyasai after that.
Hmm.
And for many years he comes. So I'm not too sure whether this is the first visit after he was invited or maybe the second visit, but definitely one of the early ones.
Going ahead, Prem, I don't know whether he was a knot or not, but there's another person who came to know Swami during this visit, and he later became a very, 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 very pivotal person in Swami's mission, and also, Swami has referred to him in multiple discourses. I'll break the suspense by naming him, that is Swami Karunyananda. In fact, we have also on our Radio Sai, we have carried a 4-page article on the entire life and achievements of Swami Karunyananda. He lived to the ripe old age of, I think, 102 or 103, and he passed away in 1997. He came to Swami for the first time in 1958, and how it happened is so beautiful because it happened during this visit. As you said, on 31st, Swami left for Rajahmundry. And on the 1st of September, the next day, at 4 p.m. in the town hall or the municipality museum hall, as it was called back then. This hall, even to this day, it exists. It was built in 1891, so it's a 130-year-old building which still exists to this day. And Swami's discourse was scheduled there and hundreds and nearly a few thousands of people gathered in that hall. And Swami spoke to them on the efficacy of Namasmarana. And coincidentally, to this town hall gathering, another person who was quite popular in Rajahmundry region because of the good work that he had done, that was Swami Karunyananda. He had also come to attend this meeting. At that point in time, Swami Karunyananda was about 60, 62 years old. And he had actually set up something called the Gautami Jiva Karunya Sangha, which was a charitable organization to undertake a lot of service activities. In fact, whenever there would be any cyclone or storms, which are very, very common in Andhra Pradesh, the members of the Gautami Jiva Karunya Sangha would travel there, do service, they would collect donations and use it to help all those in need. A lot of seva activities have been done, which are detailed in that article which I referred to. But yes, he had come, and he had come along with his guru. His guru was a certain Malayala Swami. Again, fascinating stories about him. All of those are documented in the article. But they had come there and...
Apparently, this Malayala Swami had led many, many devotees from that region to Swami. Many of the old devotees had association with him before they came to Swami.
Swami. Mm. And so, I think along with the avatar, a lot of other beings who have craved to be with the avatar come along. And they also guide along because of their compassion. They embody, like Swami says... A metal piece, when it is in touch with the magnet, becomes a magnet itself. I think all these souls are like that. They also become divine in a manner and they want to pull more and more iron filings to the magnet. And that's why that's a kind of being that Malayala Swami is. So there, after the discourse, it was a very moving, very simple discourse, very effective one, very practical one. on how to use Namasmarana to overcome everything in life. And after that discourse, as everybody was exiting, Swami Karunyananda hears a voice. Karunyananda? Karunyananda. Imagine that. And he turns around and it is Swami calling him. A 30-year-old, 31, 32. Yeah, so in 1958, Swami would have been 32 years. Right. A 32-year-old Swami calling out a 62-year-old Swamiji. And when he turns, Swami tells him, I'm going towards Kakinada tomorrow. Will you come with me? This is the first thing Swami ever speaks to Swami Karunyananda. And Swami Karunyananda says, yes, Swami, I will come. I'll pack some things and I'll come. Swami says, yeah, very good. We will go. And Swami Karunyananda says, Swami, then you should come to Jiva Karunya Sangam. Swami says, yeah, tomorrow only we'll go. We'll go there. And that is how, you know, Swami Karunyananda quickly packs a few cloth items. You know, he's a Swamiji, barely minimal needs. And he travels with Swami. Swami visits the Jiva Karunya Sangam, talks to all the inmates there, blesses them. And the passion with which Swami speaks, you know, Swami Karunyananda is very touched. Because he being the founder and he is having that idea and that passion to do it, I don't think he has seen anybody else in life having the sharing the same passion. And he feels that this passion that Swami is showing is something very unique, because it is not a passion towards his organization. It's a passion towards somebody else's organization. So then he realizes that this Swami is all about seva. And that is why, you know, later in his years, he even shuts down the Jiva Karunya Sangam, because he feels that being with Swami and serving Swami, he would be doing greater seva to humanity or society than running the Jiva Karunya Sangam. That's an amazing transformation that happens in the life of Swami Karunyananda. But he comes to Swami and he, after this visiting the Gautami Jiva Karunya Sangam, Swami travels extensively. And we will be going into the details today. But what we have to keep in mind is, throughout these travels, Swami Karunyananda is with Swami in the same car. So the Karunyananda in the car kind of, you know, he travels with Swami, and during these travels, many beautiful experiences, and he discovers many facets of Bhagwan, which bowls him over, which actually leads him to ultimately giving up everything and settling down permanently in Prashanthi Nilayam. In fact, in many of the photographs, the most famous ones being the 1975 50th birthday celebrations of Bhagwan, everywhere carrying the umbrella over Bhagwan is Swami Karunyananda. On many occasions, Swami Karunyananda has also held the empty urn above the silver idol of Shirdi Baba, into which, you know, into that urn, Swami would put his empty hand and create that Vibhuti Shavar, that Vibhuti Abhishekam. He has held the pot for Bhagwan till 1997, when he passed away. And Swami gave a quarter of his discourse on Swami Karunyananda only, on what a fulfilling life he had led. And on many occasions, you know, Swami has referred to Swami Karunyananda with a lot of trust and faith, saying that, you know, so I think it was during the 60th birthday discourse where Swami says that so many thousands of people have been fed, and for that all the rice and the wheat has been arranged by Swami Karunyananda. And Swami names another person, I forget. Swami says from Rajamandri he gets, I just tell him, and whether it is 100 or 1000 or 10,000 bags, it arrives and he gets everything done. He is the perfect devotee. He is a perfect instrument. That's how Swami has praised him lavishly in many discourses. So that's why I said, whether he is a third knot or not, another devotee, you know, who would win this opportunity to serve Bhagwan throughout his life, actually met Bhagwan on this day, on the 1st of September, when Swami delivered his discourse at the town hall or municipality museum hall at Rajamandri.
There's that very beautiful incident which is documented during his trips in the car. I think it must have been one of the first trips, I mean, which you just narrated, where you traveled extensively with Swami. So apparently, I mean, you can imagine you're with Swami for so many hours, and there must be some conversation, some interesting exchange. So apparently one day Swami asked him, Karunyananda, do you know to sing? So he said, Swami, I wouldn't say I know to sing, but I like to sing. So Swami said, can you sing bhajans? He said, I don't know bhajans, Swami. I like Ramadasa's Kritis, Bhadrachalam Ramadasa's Kritis, and I sing them to myself sometimes. Then Swami said, oh, why don't you sing one song? And sitting in the car behind, he starts singing some kriti of Ramadasa, and suddenly he gets a flashback of, you know, remembers a scene which happened in 1936. This is in 50s, 25 years, easily 22, 25 years before. He remembers that in 1936, he was in Bhadrachalam. He had been there for darshan. And there was some commotion when he realizes that somebody has brought a small boy, a teenager. And he recollects then it was actually Swami who had come there as a small boy, brought there by Venkamma Garu and her husband. They had brought him on a pilgrimage, and already people were telling that it's a divine boy, he's a, you know, son of a divine of God, was how he was referred to.
And in fact, he was being taken around in a procession.
In a procession.
Right.
I mean, this is not documented anywhere. You know, we have not come across in any of our readings.
This actually has been documented in a small booklet,
okay,
which is present in our library of the Sat Sai Books and Public Hand Trust.
Mm-hmm.
It's a booklet on Swami Karunyananda, not a publication from this.
That's what I'm saying. Yes. Unless we hear, I mean, until we heard it in Karunyananda's narration, it has not been documented by anybody else.
That Swami traveled to
Bhadrachalam in 1930s. Much later, Swami had made many trips to Bhadrachalam, but 1936, and Swami was given this kind of a reception there. And at that time, he said, you know, what is this? Everybody are children of God. What is so special about that boy? But 25 years later, he is in the car with that same Swami.
You know, when you say this, I remember another little experience, so beautiful one. One of my classmates, mm-hmm, name is Ranganath Raju. I remember him telling me that he's from the Adilabad region, but he has extensively toured many parts of Andhra. And he used to tell me that, you know, this was 2005, 2006. Swami was, you know, confined to a wheelchair, and he was still saying, but, you know, Swami is going to do one big travel to Bhadrachalam. So I asked why. He says, the people in the region know, they have firm faith because Bhadrachala Ramadas,
mm-hmm,
has said that Lord Rama has given me a promise that he is going to put step in Bhadrachalam. So that is their firm belief. And so this classmate of mine was telling me that I am convinced that Rama is Swami only. So Swami has to come to Bhadrachalam. And then, you know, 2011, Swami left. So this is what happened. And when we were researching for this article on Karunyananda, we came across this book. That's why it was a very thrilling discovery. You know, I called up my classmate and I told him that, you know what? You are simply getting disappointed that promise was not kept. It has been kept long back in 1936 itself because it has been documented. So, you know, sometimes I just feel that, Swami, you are so selfless that you don't even document these things. These are so beautiful. I feel it's the nature of selflessness not to propagate, not to advertise, nothing. But that selflessness inspires us, and if we manage to document it, I'm sure it'll inspire so many others. I really felt, wow, look at this. A promise given has been fulfilled and no drum beating about it at all. So it was much later that we got to know that a promise that, you know, in Bhadrachalam, Ramadas is considered almost close to God. Like, if whatever Ramadas has said has to come true. And Ramadas apparently has promised them that Rama is going to come here. And yes, 1936, Rama went there as documented in the thin book, Jeeva Charitra of Swami Karunyananda.
Right. I think thereafter also Swami had been there. There's a very beautiful discourse which we often refer to. Because there Swami was giving a discourse in the town of Bhadrachalam, and most of the people listening were the shopkeepers and people who are settled there doing business based on the pilgrims who would come there. So Swami would tell them, Swami had given them advice how they should treat this opportunity of serving devotees who are coming to a pilgrim center. Very, very applicable to people
us,
like
yeah.
us, you know, in Prashanthi Nilayam. So that was later, 60s or sometime, I think Swami had visited Bhadrachalam.
It only shows, you know, how much is there for us to even go through the documented life of Bhagwan. I think lifetime is not enough even for that. In that sense, we are very, very lucky, because if we choose to saying that, Swami, this life is only for thinking about you and reading your stories, we have enough material, we have enough things to discover. So, the different places that Swami went, you know, I'll just probably just briefly name those places. Swami went to Mirtipadu, Toredu, Bikkavolu, Kattamuru, Samarlakota and Peddapuram. But before all this, as I said, the first place that Swami went to was Mirtipadu, and the discourse that Swami delivered in Mirtipadu, possibly I think we'll just have time to go through that one discourse before we conclude today's satsang. So beautiful, and again it was on Namasmarana. The summary of the beginning part of the discourse is, Swami says, give up doubt, hesitation and fear. Do not give any chance for these to strike root in your mind. By means of the inner divine strength with which they are equipped, people can achieve anything. They can even become God, which is the ultimate, you know. To help you to give up the fear and doubt, keep the name of the Lord always on your tongue and in your mind. So once again, yet again, Swami was emphasizing on Namasmarana as the most beautiful and easiest method to inculcate fearlessness and courage to tread this path and achieve the highest. And, you know, Swami is speaking to the farmers here. It's all farmers. And he's telling the farmers, don't think low of yourself. There's nothing that you cannot achieve. And for that, use Namasmarana. And that's why I don't think it is surprising that Swami even narrated a story relating to farmers about how, you know, Narada considers himself to be the greatest devotee. And he goes to Vishnu and he says, Lord, who is the greatest devotee? And Vishnu says, my greatest devotee is that farmer there. Mm-hmm. I think it is giving a lot of motivation and courage to Swami, to the farmers, because Swami is coming and telling that Lord considers the farmer to be the greatest devotee. Narada goes and sees, why is this farmer the greatest devotee? He sees that morning, once before he begins his work, he chants the name of Narayana. Once at lunchtime and once before going to bed at night. And he comes and tells Vishnu, what is this Narayana? He is chanting your name only thrice a day. I chant it incessantly throughout the day. I sing your glory. I don't know. I think simply to slight me or make fun of me, you are telling that he is a greater devotee. Then Narayana says, oh Narada, I was just joking. You are my devotee. You will do anything for me. Can you do one small task? He says, whatever is the task, I'll do, Narayana. He says, can you carry this pot of water around for a whole day and ensure that not a drop of water falls out when you're doing it? I will be very happy if you do this for me. Narada says, definitely, my lord. And he does that. Throughout the day, he carries this pot of water on his head. And at the end of the day, he comes and tells, Lord, I have done as you asked. And then Narayana says, Narada, throughout this time, how many times did you think of me? He says, Lord, I was doing your work. I was doing your work only, so my focus was all on the pot to ensure that not a drop of water falls out. So, I didn't think of you at all. And then Narayana tells him, Narada, you were just carrying a pot of water. There are far greater burdens that the farmer carries. And he carries it thinking of it as my work. And yet, he thinks of me three times a day. That is why I say he is my greatest devotee. And then Swami tells all the farmers that do your work like that. Whatever you are doing, think of it as Swami's work. Think of it as the Lord's work. And whenever you get free time, think of the Lord. Do Namasmarana. There's nothing. I know people were so motivated. And in fact, there's one beautiful, the way Swami concluded his discourse. I would like to just read it out. Swami says, spend your time in the contemplation of the beauty of nature. The beauties of nature which are spread out before you in the earth and the sky. Green expanses of crops that you have raised. Cool breezes that waft contentment and joy. The panorama of colored clouds, the music of the birds. Sing the glories of God as you walk along the bunds of the fields and banks of the canals. Do not talk hatefully in the midst of all this evidence of divine love. Do not get angry in these placid surroundings. Do not disturb the sky with your shouts and curses. Do not pollute the air with your vengeful boasts. Let the tongue, accustomed to the bitterness of the margosa fruit of worldly triumphs and disasters, taste the sweet honey of remembering the Lord's name. Experiment with this for a time, and you will be surprised at the result. You will feel the vast improvement in peace and stability in you and around you. Learn this easy lesson, get immersed in joy, and let others also share that joy with you. This is the message I leave with you. this was the discourse that Swami delivered at Mirtipadu.
Right. It's a beautiful contrast with the, you know, the discourse that Swami gave at that Firestone company. I mean, I was just thinking when we were going through that discourse, what would have led that person to invite Swami to a company like that and give a spiritual discourse, you know, whatever was the occasion. How many of us think that, you know, there is no difference between a spiritual message being given at that time and my work which I'm doing? I mean, imagine you're going to set up a company or starting a factory. Will you call Swami to give a spiritual discourse like that? Because we think that, no, that's a different occasion. That doesn't call for this sort of a message. Mm. Right? We want somebody to speak highly of the people on the stage and people who have achieved. You want to thank all the people. But I think this is what Swami was making all of us do, that to make Swami a part of our life. And Swami was, Swami would often say this, you know, the tools for learning spirituality is there in our own life. You don't have to look for anything else. And this is a pattern with all the great saints, right? You look at Saint Kabir, he will give a message based on something that he sees, the grinding of wheat. He takes a message from that. Tukaram would give a message on the famine which strikes in that region. So everything around you, and that is what Swami did. A Firestone became an example for spirituality. Here Swami is giving examples related to the job that they were doing as farmers. In fact, the way Swami started that discourse itself was so beautiful. Swami says, "Today I am really full of joy, for I have before me people who are engaged in hardy toil and who sacrifice their personal comforts in order to make others happy." Right? Yeah. Swami is acknowledging that it is not a lucrative profession. You know, even today, after so many decades of independence, we still cannot say that this kind of farming is a lucrative option. So definitely there is some bit of sacrifice that is driving the profession. Saying that me toiling like this, somebody is having food on their plate, somebody is benefiting out of this. And Swami is acknowledging that. And Swami is saying, just you already have that sacrifice, just add a little bit of namasmarana to it. And then somewhere in between, Swami tells that, see, till now you would have heard this name Sai Baba. Today you have the form in front of you. Now your contemplation has got the form also. Right? So beautifully, Swami says, you when you chant Rama's name, you also think of the form. Similarly, I'm giving you one more name. You know, you can take my name also, and now you have the form also. And that is not merely to this group, it is to all of us. Swami is saying that, you know, I have given you a form also to contemplate on. And that is the greatest blessing that Swami has given all of us devotees in that sense, and to integrate him into our life and whatever we are doing. Right? Everything becomes an example. And Swami would say, the housewife who's cooking in the house, she does not need to look outside her kitchen for examples in spirituality. Everything is there in front of her. The farmer has examples in front of her. And if you go through Swami's discourses, everything becomes an upaya. Everything becomes an instrument of teaching, from the handkerchief to the tumbler, to the lights, to the mic. Everything is an example in a spiritual lesson.
From then, from that village of Mirtipadu, now this happened on the 2nd of September. Just imagine, Prem, on the 3rd of September, Swami visits, as I said earlier, Toredu, Bikavolu, Kattamuru, Samarlakota, and finally reaches Peddapuram. You know, Professor Kasturi has documented it as Peddavaram, but when we check the maps, apparently it's Peddapuram. There's another Peddavaram which is about 300 to 400 kilometers away. But even this is about a 150 to 160 kilometers totally in the roads of 1958. You know, Swami has definitely slogged so much. His body has taken on so many strains. Such a sacrifice for the sake of devotees. And at Peddapuram, Swami gave a discourse to the huge gathering yet again. And Swami spoke of physical, mental and spiritual strength. It must have made such an impact, because when somebody is speaking of physical, mental and spiritual strength, he's an epitome of that. Just traveling that much and speaking non-stop, all in one single day. On the 3rd September, all these places that I read out, 5 places. And as Professor Kasturi records, another beautiful miracle that happened is, this is in the September of 1958. September is the time when there's a lot of rains in these regions. A lot of cyclones also hit. From the Bay of Bengal, a lot of cyclones come, and some of the most devastating cyclones that the state of Andhra Pradesh has faced has happened during September-October months when the monsoon is withdrawing from India. So, this was that season, and Professor Kasturi records that anywhere that Swami went and spoke, it was all in open areas because all these villages couldn't afford, I think, a hall or anything. Right. They didn't have such a hall there. All open areas and the peak of the monsoon season, the cyclone season, and yet not a drop of rain when Swami was conducting the function. Either before or after it would be there, but when Swami is there, no. So that was the miracle that Swami silently did. There was no waving away of clouds, no announcing on the mic that there'll be no rains, nothing like that. But just with his will, kept away the heavy clouds. Though it was heavy rainy season, not a drop of rain wherever Swami visited.
Right, and this was all, to remind you, on the other side of Godavari. Rajahmundry itself is on the other side
eastern
of
side.
Godavari, eastern side. So it is after crossing, Swami goes there. So after all these visits, I mean, as Arun was saying, these are not simply driving past those villages. When you say that Swami has given a discourse at each village, that also means that Swami would have interacted so much with so many people. Swami would have gone around giving darshan. That entire, thing that goes along with Swami's visit to a place, everything
and
happening.
And like you said, Prem, if you actually plot these on Google Maps, they are not in one straight line. You know, you go up to a point, then you have to return back halfway to take another road. They are not connected well.
Right.
So it would have been a lot of hectic traveling, at least 7 to 8 hours of traveling and 7 to 8 hours of non-stop speaking and interacting. That in itself is 16 to 17 hours in that day.
Right. And after this, I think on 7th of September, Swami crosses back. And all this while, Professor Kasturi notes that Godavari was in spate. So on 7th, he crossed the floods back to a place called Kovuru and proceeded to Tadipaka, I think, right? In the Delta area. And he was at Chebrole on the 8th morning. In the same evening, he reached Nuzvid. I don't know how that's pronounced.
Nuzvid,
50 miles away. And there at a meeting which he addressed at 7 p.m., Swami spoke about the duties and responsibilities and the relationship between Guru and Sishya. So the discourses have not ended. And we know when Swami is traveling, and this is 30-year-old Swami, it's full of life. You know, Swami would have been speaking nonstop even in the car, as we were talking about Karunananda traveling with Swami in the car. I mean, It's dizzying to think how busy this schedule of Swami was. And this is not just the one time Swami was doing this. As we're going through the Sanatan Sati, I think we're going to come through many places where Swami is doing this. That a 5-day or a 1-week trip to a place, Swami is giving as much as, he can during visits such as these.
Maybe we'll just conclude with the final thing that Professor Kasturi records, that on the morning of the 9th September, Swami moved towards Venkatagiri, and there he performed the opening ceremony for a new building for a girls' high school. So he arrived at Venkatagiri at 4:30 p.m. and that evening he opened a new building of the RVKY Board Girls' High School. And if you look at it is Raja Velugoti Krishna Yachendra Board Girls' High School. It's on Venkatagiri. On the 9th of September, Swami inaugurated a new building for this school. The school apparently was there from the British times, and later it fell into disrepair, and the Venkatagiri Raja took over, said that he would maintain the school, and because he maintained it, the school got renamed after him. And I think even to this day that school runs.
Okay.
I don't know who is in charge, but then back then Swami inaugurated a new building, and there also Swami delivered another divine discourse. And Swami discoursed on the ideals which educationists have always to keep in view. He spoke of the sacred role of the mother and the home in the development of the individual, and wanted that every girl should grow up into a kind and generous-hearted, God-fearing woman. Swami also said that all the shastras and scriptures, they were like the dikes and bunds that help to keep the raging waters of selfishness and greed, ensuring that they don't cause harm or danger. meaning it is our scriptures, the Vedas, the Shastras, the Puranas, the Upanishads, these are the ones that are keeping a check on the raging waters of selfishness and greed. Swami also pleaded that there should be harmonious cooperation in the task of education between the home, school and society. Education is not just about going to school and the teachers. It is a combination of home, school as well as society. And I think that is what Swami has beautifully replicated in the Sri Satya Sai system of education. Because education that doesn't harmonize all the three is only partial education at best or lopsided education at worst. So this was the discourse that Swami delivered at the RVKY Board Girls High School at Venkatagiri, after which I think Swami returned to Puttaparthi, because it's not recorded, we can just assume that. Swami returned to Puttaparthi, and with that we will conclude our afternoon satsang today, dear listeners. We will end with a song, on the other side of which will be the program Veda Jignyasa by Brother Ganesh. So look forward to seeing you again next week, same time. Enjoy this song. Jai Sai Ram.
Janani, 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 jagatkarani, purani, narani, janani, 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 jagatkarani, purani, narani, janani, 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 jagatkarani, purani, narani, janani, 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 జగత్కారణి పూరణి నారణియే జనని 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 జగత్కారణి పూరణి నారణియే జనని 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 జగత్కారణి పూరణి నారణియే జనని 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 పాడి పాడి ఉందన్ పాదం పణిందు వందెన్ పార్వతియే పరమేశ్వరియే కోటి కోటి తుంబం ఓడి మరయుమే ఉన్నరుల్ పార్వయిలే பாடி உந்தன் பாதம் பணிந்து வந்தேன் பார்வதியே பரமேஸ்வரியே கோடி கோடி துன்பம் ஓடி மறையுமே உன்னருள் பார்வையிலே பாடி பாடி உந்தன் பாதம் பணிந்து வந்தேன் பார்வதியே பரமேஸ்வரியே கோடி கோடி துன்பம் ஓடி மறையுமே உன்னருள் பார்வையிலே பாடி பாடி உந்தன் பாதம் பணிந்து வந்தேன் பார்வதியே பரமேஸ்வரியே கோடி கோடி பாராயோ கருணை பொழிவாயோ கடை கண் பாராயோ கருணை பொழிவாயோ கடை கண் பாராயோ கருணை பொழிவாயோ பாட்டிலேசு பிரியநாயகியே அடைக்கலம் அடைந்தேன் காத்தருள் பாட்டிலேசு பிரியநாயகியே அடைக்கலம் அடைந்தேன் காத்தருள் ஜனனி 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 జగత్కారణి పూరణి నారణియే జనని 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 జగత్కారణి పూరణి నారణియే జనని 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 జననీ